My name is Kulisile Sefako. Today we do have a very big committee. This is a joint committee meeting. The Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources and Portfolio Committee on the Department of Environment Affairs. Having welcomed you, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I will hand over to honorable members to introduce themselves. Honorable member, Whip.
Thanks, honorable chairperson. I'm Silent Makubele, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs in the National Assembly.
Good morning. Musa Nkosi Mlambo, a member of the Select Committee from Gauteng.
Good morning, Chairperson, members, Minister. Rav Julius, permanent member of this Portfolio Select Committee, Gauteng.
Good morning, member. Good morning, Chair. I am Kathy Lebeskagne. I am a member of the Select Committee representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Haskell Power. I am the Secretary for the Select Committee. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. Chineke Matabela, I'm the Committee Speaker for the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Grubish Yuster, Content Advisor for the Select Committee.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Scotty Watts, Content Advisor for the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs.
Chineke Matabela, Edna Mulewa, member of the committee.
Not Sipon Maba, Environmental Affairs, thank
you. Rian Okomp, Environmental Affairs.
Mondema Environmental Affairs.
Elizabeth Matukwameng, Environmental Affairs, Equality Management.
Bongo, Parliamentary Officer.
I'm Shuni Swami Munjezi, Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, my name is Mark Gordon. I'm also from the Department of Environmental Affairs.
Okay, good morning. My name is Mark Schmidt, Parliamentary Officer at German Consulate General.
Good morning. My name is Brent Flainsmith. I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning. My name is Harry Masenya from Minister, Parliamentary Relations Officer. Thanks.
Morning, Chair and members. My name is Errol Makova. I'm also from the Ministry.
Good morning. My name is Bongzeni Sango from Environmental Affairs.
Morning, everybody. My name is Darren from the committee.
Thank you very much, honorable member that has just joined us. Can you just introduce yourself quickly?
Thank you, Chairperson Ellen Prin, representing the Western Cape. Thank you, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Hinda Nyambi from the Environmental Committee.
From the Select Committee, we've got an apology of Honorable Singh. The Chairperson of the Environmental Affairs will be joining us later. It's now with another meeting. From the department, is there any apology?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. We have an apology from the Deputy Minister, who will be joining us, if we're still on today.
So without any waste of time, can I now hand over to the department to give us presentation? Honourable Minister, you can lead.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you indeed for the opportunity to once again be at this joint meeting of the Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. We have asked that because we have some few items on the agenda, we be allowed to start with the one that deals with CITES presentation, which there will then be followed by the other remaining one, the annual report and fourth quarter report, if you do allow us, Chair. And I think, I'm not sure if DG would like to say some few words, but we have our DDG responsible for BNC who's coming to make a short presentation. He has a tendency to speak long. Let's rather have the honourable member speaking long. He must not over-explain. Where there are questions, we can then ask questions. Thank you, honourable.
At least must be bear in mind that it shouldn't exceed 20 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will try to do it in half the time or less. It's a presentation on the convention on endangered, on trade in endangered species of plants and animals. We call it fauna and flora. We call it CITES. Honorable members will remember we hosted COP17 previously, COP17 of climate change. This time around we are hosting COP17 that deals with the trade in plants and animals. It's a very interesting and very important convention. So I'll be talking through where we are in terms of the preparations in South Africa, being the host, and also other information that's relevant to this, including some of the proposals on the table that will inform how we approach our position. Then go to the next slide. This convention is different from others in that it's very interactive. It's got a lot of technical issues that we have to deal with. There are decisions that have to be taken on how trade is dealt with between countries. There's a mechanism for that in terms of decision making. That mechanism is informed by where those species of animals and plants are listed. There are different categories. There's category 1, category 2, category 3. Category 1 would mean that species that are listed there are not supposed to be traded from one country to another. Category 2, of course, there could be trade, or there can be trade, but that trade must be controlled. There are certain prescripts that need to be followed. Category 3 would be that a country would realize that this species is about to be threatened and would ask other countries to support them in ensuring that it's protected, and then they will have that listed on Appendix 3 to say we have some kind of restrictions internally. So there are many ways of dealing with this. There are decisions that need to be taken on a regular basis, but this convention meets every 3 years to review those decisions, whether species are being uplisted to Appendix 1 from 2 or downlisted from high control to another level. So those are the things that we'll be dealing with amongst others. If you can go to the next slide. This conference of parties, the 17th one as I indicated, is going to be held here in South Africa from the 24th to the 5th of October, 24th of September in Sandton Convention Center. Of course, there will be meetings prior to that and meetings immediately after. Another interesting and important meeting for the first time that we've done this is that the People and Parks Conference, which also deals with how people interface with species and the utilization of sustainable use, will be held just before the convention starts. Can we go to the next slide? The like any other big meetings that are or events that are held in South Africa, there's an LOC that meets on a monthly basis, including the police and other security agencies, to deal with the arrangements and logistical arrangements related to the conference. Let's move to the next slide. There is also what we call an interdepartmental substance committee. I think members should note that the convention is highly technical in the sense that decisions are not just based on principles, but they are specifics. If we are dealing with a specific species, we need to mention them and the rationale around that. So hence the substance committee that meets regularly. There are dates indicated there. They've always been meeting. And also all those stakeholders that we think represent the broad spectrum that can inform how South Africa is going to deal with matters related to CITES when we host that. Can we move on? Of course, when it comes to communication as well, we've got a process. We have started to intensify our communication. You may have heard over the radio there adverts that are being aired around this, especially promoting what we stand for and our principal approach to conservation management in South Africa, sustainable utilization. That's what we are promoting. We're promoting that with due understanding that and recognition that there are so many others who are anti-sustainable use, hence our approach and entrenching that through communication and many other things that we are communicating as part of our preparations. Can we move on to the next slide? We have a logo. I think we'll get used to this logo as we move along. The logo covers a lot of things. I'm not going to read through what it covers, but the central message on this one is that there's an interface between human beings and species, and that interface is not only confined to trade, but it also involves conservation. It also involves that interrelationship that's intricate. So we have the logo representing that. We've chosen the rhino also for obvious reasons, that it's an iconic species, and when it comes to trade, that's the species that would come up front more than any other. And therefore, in placing Africa where it is there, you would see on the lakes there are people. So it's not only about animals and plants, but it's about trade, which involves economics, which involves people, which involves livelihoods and issues related to that. Can we go to the next slide? We've got a website for more information. We're doing a countdown. So any information that needs to be posted is posted there to inform delegates that are coming or anything that else that people need to know, and the link to all the proposals that are going to be discussed. There are also proposed side events. There are so many things that South Africa we can share. So they are listed there, a number of them, successes here in South Africa, some of the things that we have done well more than any other, the use of technology in the protection of species and many other things, security related and conservation that are going to be shared. So all those 16 are some of the possibilities that are going to that we are pursuing for side events so that we can share with others and learn from others as well. Next slide. There are also exhibitions. With the South African Pavilion, there's a space there. If you go to the next slide, it's just the layout of how things are going to be. We are clear on what's going to happen where, but there's a space for interaction during the conference. There's also space for exhibitions, not only from government, but also from any other agencies that support the cause that we are promoting, especially sustainable utilization. Can we go to the next one? Of course, in terms of delegation and observers, there's a process that's dealing with that to ensure that we have a delegation that will represent South Africa properly. What's needed to be noted on this slide specifically is that for the first time, we'll have the ministerial high-level segment at CITES. This has not been previously the way how it's planned to happen even before the beginning of CITES, specifically to get to be appraised and also to be informed on how the political space will interface with these issues and the direction that we need to take. Can we move on to the next slide? it also deals with delegation and observers. Let's move on. There are possible agenda items. As I indicated, that this is highly technical. Technical in the sense that
there are specific issues that we'll have to deal with. Countries send proposals, and those proposals are taken in. At the moment, CITES Secretariat received more than 175 proposals. Those proposals have to be interacted with. You may find that someone is putting a proposal that affects us as South Africa, but it's not us who are putting that proposal. So we have to interface or interact with that information to be able to prepare ourselves and see how we deal with that proposal. It may not be in our favor as it's proposed, but then we'll have to deal with it upfront. Let's move on. There are so many proposals involving animals and plants, as I indicated. There are resolutions, there are decisions that need to be taken. As you can see, the numbers that have been received on plants and animals, and some of them have implications on trade in South Africa. If it's a species that we have listed to be able to trade with and someone wants to put it in Appendix 1 where there's no trade, we have to respond to that, of course, and interact with that. So the next few slides talk to proposals that have implications to us. It's a proposal by countries that are listed on the left there, Chad, Nigeria and others, who would want the lion to be uplisted, meaning that there shouldn't be trade on lion and its derivatives or any other thing that comes from lion, including bones and other things. So that's another proposal. There are proposals. There's a proposal that we put through on Cape Mountain zebra. We've done well. We had it listed earlier in Appendix 1 for no trade because it would, the numbers were too low then, and we took that decision, but this time around the numbers have recovered. So we'd want that removed and downlisted from Appendix 1 to Appendix 2. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but suffice to say that even on elephants, there are other people who are pushing for that to be uplisted, to Appendix 1, no trade at all, even in ivory and all those other things. We have put our positions very clear on how we are going to respond to each one of these proposals that has been put through. We have scanned through and interrogated through the Substance Committee the 175 proposals that have been put through. There are also marine species that have got implications to us that we have noted, which I'm not going to go through each one of them. If we move on, there are also resolutions that need to be taken, especially resolutions affecting trade. You may have heard, and I think it was on papers, that some countries in the West were saying that South Africa's trophies should not be allowed from hunting. You get trophies that need to be exported to other countries, and they're saying that should not be allowed in their countries anymore. And we need to be very clear in terms of rules and of procedures. We have to be very clear in terms of the prescript of the convention so that there's no ambiguity. Countries may abuse that space, and therefore we'll also be very, very much interested in that space as well. When it comes to illegal wildlife trade, it has to be clear. There's legal trade, then there is illegal activities that have got nothing to do with legal trade, and there should not be confusion between the two. So we will also be working around that in terms of resolutions that are supposed to be clear and support sustainable utilization. Move on. In terms of decisions, there are decisions that need to be taken. One relates to CITES. Of course, we are interested in that space because we are concerned with the status of this species in the wild. Let's move on to the next one. There's also an interesting aspect related to what we call decision-making mechanisms. Members may know that 9 years ago, there was a moratorium that was placed on trading in ivory, in affecting South Africa, Namibia, Zimbabwe, and Zambia, and that 9 years is about to expire now. So we are coming in with, as CITES took a decision, the Secretariat was supposed to provide what we call a decision-making mechanism. It's a process that will inform how we go forward post these 9 years of moratorium affecting these four countries. So that has not happened. The Secretariat did not deliver on this. So we took it upon ourselves, working with Namibia and other other countries, few, to come up with a proposition on how decision-making mechanism has to be dealt with moving forward in relation to this particular issue. Let's move on. We have also provided this information that relates to how our position is going to be managed relative to trade in rhino horn, and there was a process to inform this, and the decision that cabinet took was well informed. There was a process that was interactive. It was led by the interministerial committee, and minister appointed what we call a committee of inquiry to inform this. There was a technical advisory committee specifically to inform the process, to a point where, if we go to the next slide, there were recommendations. What came out very strongly is that there are five areas that need to be dealt with. And when you're talking to trade, you can't talk to trade without these five areas taken care of. The issue of security and law enforcement, community empowerment, biological management, responsive legislation, legal issues, and also issues associated with demand management. There are dynamics, the economic dynamics associated with that in terms of supply, demand, and also and all these things that fuel illegal activities that we are aware of. So those are the things that the Committee of Inquiry came up with, that Cabinet endorsed as well, that have to be done. And moving on as well, they also looked at options that will inform issues around demand management in particular. And they propose three possible trade models that we can look at if we are to take that forward. Let's move on. So what Cabinet decided, associated with all these five things that I spoke about earlier on, which is our position that we're taking through to the COP, is that we are not putting any trade proposal for rhino horn in this COP that's coming, COP 17. That's the position that needs to be very clear on that. And there are a lot of other things, as I indicated earlier on, that would have to work on to make sure that the environment for trading is not abused, and we need to continue being responsible in this space as we have always been. Let's move on. So there will be meetings prior, there will be meetings after, and there are specific issues, especially for the ministerial segment that we'll be looking at. What is highlighted there, which I may not go talk to so many others except what is highlighted there, is the relationship between sustainable development and trade in wildlife. And would want to talk to these issues of sustainable use and also implications to illegal wildlife trade. That nexus we'll be talking to in that space. And there are specific questions that we'll be asking that I'm not going to read through, but these are very critical, pertinent questions that should inform how the outcome of the COP should be relative to trade. I think I will leave it here for now. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. The next presentation then is on the fourth quarter report. So I was not sure whether you wanted us to answer questions on the CITES first or just go straight.
Straight.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, honorable members, and good morning to the chairperson of both the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee. We have a presentation that looks like this in your pack, and I'll start with Program 1. We appeared before the committee, we both reflected on previously how far we were with up to quarter 3. Now today's report is about progress with quarter 4. Before we then submit to the Auditor General for auditing, and then we will table in August or end of July the annual report of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So, honorable members, I'm not going to then, those color-coded green areas, it means we've achieved the target. And then the yellow areas is where we did not quite meet, but we there is work in progress. And then a red is where we are completely out of target. So I'll spend time explaining the yellows and the reds, but just summarize on the areas where we've met our targets. The first strategic objective relates to the equitable and sound corporate governance in program one. This is an area where we undertake our work on cooperative governance. Our reports to Auditor General, we last year received unqualified audit reports, and even this year they undertook during the biannual statements, financial statements. We still were not on the red areas, and the areas where they highlighted a need for us to improve, particularly around the ICT. We have out report that we have made some progress in that respect. And on cluster and cabinet adherence to the schedule and the protocol, we still made significant progress, but it's still below what we were able to achieve in the last year. We're sitting at 95%, and now we're sitting at 94% out of activities and programs and meetings that we had undertaken, 51 of them in this last financial year. In respect to expenditure, we were sitting at 98% of our expenditure at the end of the financial year. That was on 2014-15. In this year, we at the end of March were sitting at 99.97, and our percentage expenditure we exceeded our targets in terms of affirmative procurement, both in terms of small and medium enterprises and BEE procurement. We also were able to adhere to our investor commitments in respect of our Transfrontier Conservation Area. We had a project funded for Songimvelo Nature Reserve, which involves 4x4 trails. Then the next area relates to focused funding and resourcing of the sector, particularly leveraging our public sector resources. For the biodiversity sector, we were working on a financing model that also benefits or would benefit the work of the of biodiversity conservation in provinces. And that we undertook based on an institutional review and how which of the areas of the functions of conservation require a better alignment in respect of being cost effective, but also which are the areas that require new investment. And to a greater extent, we were able to finalize the instrument for funding the sector. We presented that at the last minute, but it was not quite concluded at the end of the financial year. So it is work in progress because it was not concluded as of the 31st of March. Around the expansion, again, our expansion plan was approved through MINMEC. And then the vacancy rate for the department, honorable members, we were sitting at six. I don't know why it's so dark here. I can't see properly. Yeah? It's too dark. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we've made improvements in managing our vacancies in the department. In the last financial year, we were sitting at 10.4%. At the end of March, we were then sitting at 6.8%. So we had about 130 vacancies. in comparison with an establishment of 1,896. In respect of turnover, people leaving the organization were sitting at 4.4%. So we had about 73 employees that left the department out of that total establishment that I mentioned. And our target was that we're going to be at 8%. So we have exceeded the target because we're at 4.4%. And we have a breakdown, honorable members, of what at which levels did people leave in the organization, both at middle management level, at SMS level, as well as at low levels, that is levels 4 to 8. We had more people at that level that left for better prospects because we keep records. There is a form that people complete when they leave the organization to say why are they leaving, whether they've been they've experienced difficulties in terms of being managed in a manner that is not fair. So we have generally received indications that people are living for better prospects. We've implemented the PMDS policy in terms of managing performance in the department, and all of that is green. Now, coming to where we have yellow, in respect of our employment equity targets, 50% women in senior management level. Firstly, we have 50% women in the organization. We have met that target. We exceeded it. We're sitting at 56%. So 991 people are women in the organization at different levels. But at senior management level, we have out of that 991, 76 are women at senior management level, which then is at 43% if we talk percentage terms. So we did not meet the 50% in this area because of various other complexities, and in particular the number of vacancies that are available at senior management level. Even if we were to fill them with women, we currently are unable to meet the 50% threshold. But 50% is prescribed by the public service regulation. On grievance management of misconduct and grievances, honorable members, our target is to be able to process those cases with an average of 30 days. Our average was sitting at about 38 overall, and therefore we are not quite meeting, we did not meet the target, but we've made significant progress compared to where we were last year. And then on the implementation of risk assessment and management of security measures, we have improved in this area. We've implemented our risk assessment recommendations, 7 out of 13, and the others are work in progress, which is the remainder of that 13. The next area, honorable members, on slide, on page 5, where we have yellow in respect of our master systems plan. In this area, we're supposed to implement 6 projects. 4 of them have been achieved, but the 2 is still work in progress. And that's where we have partial implementation, and therefore we have not quite met the target in that respect. Again, this was based on us having to review our financial and resource availability after the tenders were awarded, and therefore those projects are underway and straddling and 2 financial years based on affordability. Then the next area, still under program 1, where you go to page 7, honorable members, on the local government strategy, we're supposed to be sitting at 80% implementation. We were at 74% at the end of March. So it's a slight miss, but our work on supporting local government, both in terms of some of the work that is related to waste management, chemicals and waste management, and air quality management, we are improving, but we still have not succeeded in that respect. Environmental programs, external review, we wanted as a department to have an independent assessment of the work that is undertaken in respect of our expanded public works program. However, after phase one, we had a challenge with the service provider and had to then reappoint a new service provider, which is the Human Sciences Research Council, and they have just been appointed, and now we are in a process where they are going to begin the review of the programs. And then, honourable members, on page 9, in respect of the National Climate Change Response Monitoring and Evaluation System, again, here, honourable members, we were to establish a web-based platform for climate change monitoring and evaluation system. Towards the end of the procurement process, we could not then get to implement that platform, but all the other steps before that in terms of user requirement specification, that was concluded, and we needed to align the systems and make sure that once it is implemented, we are going to be able to report to the UN to the UN Secretariat for UNFCCC. And so basically there we are still behind schedule, but we'll meet the deadline for submission to, because it's normally towards the end of the year, September, October, November. But our target was to conclude it by 31st of March. On the special tools and pre-screening, honourable members, this is an area where we have used the National Environment, in terms of the provisions of the National Environmental Management Act. We have had previously reliance on the use of the EIA as the only tool to assess impacts on the environment. Now, NEMA allows us to use other tools like the Strategic Environmental Assessment, and in that context, we were to then put in place pre-screening tools which would then aid the work of making decisions within reasonable time frames when EIAs are, or applications are received by the department. That work was delayed due to some delays with procurement processes, but again, we're still penalizing ourselves in the department because we could have managed the time frames much better in that respect. A proof of concept for the portal, GeoPortal, was also to be concluded, but we had to work with the CSIR and link that work with what we have already started in respect of the strategic environmental assessment. So this is work that is more logical in the process of doing a strategic environmental assessment, but if you miss one step, then it causes a delay and it has got a knock-on effect on the next step in that process. On page 11, honourable members, in respect of the sustainable development positions, we were to our report on recommendations on a possible trade in rhino was finalized, and Cabinet has received the report. The Minister indicated that we would come for a special briefing to the committees, and Shoni just mentioned it during the presentation on CITES. So we did not conclude the submission to Cabinet in time, but it was submitted in April after the 31st of March. That is why it is yellow. Next, page 12, honourable members, in respect of the reports or national reports on biodiversity, we submitted four reports, one to the Cartagena Protocol, the World Heritage Convention, the Transfrontier Conservation in respect of our TFCA program. We missed one, so that is why we have a yellow in that respect. And therefore, overall, honorable members, for program one, we met our target, and then we have missed one target, which is red, and the others were work in progress, which is where I've explained what the status is. Program two, which is legal authorization, compliance and enforcement, honorable members, the first yellow there relates to the percentage administrative enforcement actions resulting in compliance. Here we have, our target was 80%. We've managed to process 208 administrative enforcement actions instead of the whole 277. Or at least 80% of the 277. This is an area of a little bit of complexity, honorable members, because we work with law enforcement agencies and also some of the establishments. When you issue a warning, for instance, to an establishment that they are not complying with either an air emissions license or a waste permit or environmental authorization, you then give them time to respond. And you can only give the final administrative enforcement action on the basis of having given the opportunity for those establishments to make representations to the department. So we think that we were overly ambitious, but we were sitting at 75%. We did not meet 80% of that target. On page 15, honorable members, in respect of the interventions for streamlining environmental authorizations, we were to finalize the regulations. When a strategic environmental assessment is done, it then gives you an opportunity to say, in this area, in this geographic area, these are the areas where you have serious sensitivities on environment. Therefore, these could be your no-go zones. But in these areas, you may have, for instance, aquaculture development or any of the other activities, even some of the growing of forestry species. And the minister has to then have a regulation that allows the department to then kind of delist those activities or approve that those activities would not go through a full EIA process. So those adoption regulations were then processed for gazetting, and they then went through MINMEC, but they went through MINMEC after the 31st of March. Similarly with the Section 24 of NEMA regulations, those regulations are also going to be gazetted now for implementation, but after the 31st of March. On hydraulic fracturing, honorable members, the minister undertook to undertake one a study on emissions in respect of shale gas. That study was completed, but then we also went on to undertake a strategic environmental assessment for the whole of the Karoo region. And therefore, that work is quite complex. We have not yet concluded it, and the study itself has to be aligned with the science study that is being led by the Department of Science and Technology. And after those studies have been aligned, then they will be presented to the ministers, and we will then basically be able to conclude what we're hoping to conclude in respect of the strategic environmental assessment and attributes which would serve as baseline for sensitivities in respect of shale gas in the Karoo region. And the draft sensitivity map for the aquaculture strategic environmental assessment was to be developed. Again, here we have already started with the aquaculture strategic environmental assessment, and hopefully we will be able to finalize that in this financial year. We were still on the first phase of that work at the end of the financial year. The next area on page 16, again, honorable members, in respect of specialist reports that contain information of which the protocol will be developed, has been received. This is supposed to, again, be used in the strategic infrastructure program to ease decision-making processes in respect of the various SIPs. There are about 18 SIPs, and the department concluded the strategic environmental assessment, for instance, for the electricity and the transmission pipelines or the transmission lines for renewable energies in the country. But in other areas, we are still behind in respect of finalizing those specialist reports. Overall, honorable members, for program two, which is legal authorizations, compliance, and enforcement, we had five areas which constitute the 31% that were still work in progress, but we did not have areas that were completely off target. On program three, oceans and coast, Dr. Manekiso is here, and also when I get to the next program, Shoni as well as Mark will also come in. On program three, everything is green up until page 21, where, no, not page 21. We had, on page 21, we had the estuary management plans were to be developed. But now, in my report, it appears green, but when we gave the final, we still said that it was not finalized. I don't know whether that was the evidence, Dr. Mayekiso. Evidence. So, honorable members, the report says that everything is done, but until we have verified the evidence, we still leave it orange. So, program three targets are overall met, except that we need to verify in the area of estuary management plan. And then program four, which is climate change and air quality, page 23, in respect of the climate change regulatory framework and tools that we were to develop, there is an area where we were supposed to put in place a bill or draft bill for climate change response for the country. The bill is not yet drafted. We were still having a discussion document, and the process now with the presidency, we still have to undergo what is called a socio-economic assessment to first confirm whether that legislation is required or not. So we have not really made progress in this area because there were views that we may not need a new legislation. We may just have to strengthen the existing National Environmental Management Act and have provisions that allow us to enforce some of the requirements. For example, we would require that industry submit reports in respect of their mitigation plans in terms of reducing carbon emissions. We have now given, in respect of the DEROs or the, what is the long name? Desired emission reduction outcomes. Desired emission reduction outcomes would then give each company an allocation for them to be able to and then work towards reducing their emissions and meet those targets. So the letters have been written to those institutions, but we're still working with the private sector on a voluntary basis. So we thought that we may need to have the law that would then enforce a submission of those reports and after 5 years from 2020. So our benchmark is to year 2020. So that is why we have been going back and forth in respect of whether we require the legislation or not. And then page 26, honourable members, on the presentation again, the air quality monitoring stations meeting minimum data requirements. We have 22 air quality monitoring stations that are currently meeting the minimum data requirements, and with the capability of 80% recoverability of data. We were hoping that we could get to about 40 air quality monitoring stations by the end of the financial year. However, this is an area where we've had significant difficulties, both in terms of the capacity in the department, but also very much so the capacity of those authorities that are responsible for the monitoring stations, which is mainly the municipalities and some of the government owned monitoring stations like in the provinces. So this is an area of big improvement. We're trying our best, and for now we're still not quite making it, and we will then continue to implement a recovery plan to improve the situation. Page 27, honourable members, our framework reporting on greenhouse gas emissions by industry. Again, here we were to provide an NNE report that says how far are we in respect of our compliance by industry in respect of the greenhouse gas emissions reporting. The report is finalized, honourable members. It was not published. So in our target, it had to be published before the 31st of March. But the minister has signed off on the report recently, and it will be published still in the first quarter of this new financial year. Now coming to program 5, biodiversity and conservation, honourable members, page 29. On the presentation slides, number of biodiversity stewardship sites established. We have established one additional stewardship site that is still in progress, and the delay here is reported as based on the consultations that were required between SANParks, the lawyers, and members of the Special Wetland Management Association for New Areas, that took place between the 22nd and 23rd of February, and that consultation is still not concluded for that stewardship site. Honourable members, stewardship sites involve normally communities or other stakeholders, either close near a protected area where it's a national park or a provincial park, and we are encouraging participation and involvement of communities in conservation, and in most instances for that site to be recognized as a stewardship site, we need to have an agreement that has been signed by all the parties, and in this case we have not concluded that process. Page 30, honourable members, the area of improved access in respect of fair and equitable sharing of benefits. We here again referring to benefit sharing agreements which are signed with either communities where there is an extraction of a resource like Cape Alu or even Hoodia. If you are to extract Hoodia, and probably then there is a community that has got indigenous knowledge that is destined to benefit. We need to then reach agreements also with a private party, whether it's a pharmaceutical company that is exploiting that resource. And in this case, we had one benefit sharing agreement concluded, and the others were still in progress in respect of negotiations for conclusion and sign off by the minister. So we did not quite meet the target of 5 benefit sharing agreements concluded. In the second area of natural resource-based enterprises, 8 sustainable natural resource-based enterprises were established, and we have funding for all their business plans approved. However, our target was 10, so we did not have 10. We ended up with 8 at the end of the financial year. In terms of Program 5, honorable members, again, we don't have an area that is red. We have those 3 areas that I referred to, which were work in progress, and we have action plans to recover and make sure that we conclude what was outstanding as of the 31st of March. On environmental programs, honorable members, the one page 32, in respect of full-time equivalents, at the end of March, we had red because we had 15,320 full-time equivalents, and because we were still making sure that we have validation by the Department of Public Works through verification, and up until Sunday, we were then awaiting finalization of the numbers. So it does look like they have exceeded the target. What I have now is 54,199 verified through the. But again, we will update this rate once I bring the record from the Department of Public Works to confirm. So it's an area where there has been a little bit of improvement, but again, that was subject to verification. Yes, subject to verification, because Public Works, the minister is saying I must explain what has happened. Public Works, where the reporting is submitted, changed the system in the middle of the financial year, and therefore there was a lot of backlog because they are capturing from previous other years, and as a sector also we were affected by that, and we can't then report that we've achieved until everything has been submitted in that system and verified. So on that note, honourable members, I think in this program again, in respect of the school desks, school furniture delivery, we use the invasive species and varieties, whether it's blackwood or pine trees, to make furniture. So we have areas where we have eco-furniture factory using that biomass and also making school desks. At the end of the financial year, we had 119,104 delivered instead of the 200,000 delivered to schools. Because that is the agreement that we reached with the Department of Basic Education to supply them. And overnight visitor accommodation, we were sitting at 43,000 units, and some of the staff accommodation for sand parks, because we fund those that investment, though it is reported under the department annual report. Honourable members, that is all in respect of the employment program progress report, and the one area where we had the red is still showing red until we have changed it administratively once from the report that we received from Public Works. Okay, let me continue. A minister was asking now. I'll provide the question, Minister. Then Program 7 is the last program, honourable members. which deals with chemicals and waste. And first, the first strategic objective deals with threats to environmental quality and integrity. We were to deliver a number of industry waste management plans, and those plans had to be reviewed. The three that were identified industry waste management plans in respect of the e-lighting, paper and packaging, and e-waste industry plans. Those plans are still draft. That's why we have read. We have not met the target, and subsequently. We will then finalize the process in this financial year, and the minister will be able to gazette those waste plans once they have been the reviews are finalized, and Mark can further explain some of the glitches that they have been facing, but the fact is that we have not been able to deliver them. In respect of unlicensed landfill sites, honourable members, again, this is an area where we are supporting municipalities, hand-holding municipalities, because landfill sites are managed by municipalities. What we do as a department, because we've identified the gap, after mapping what the state of play was in respect of landfill sites in the country, there were landfill sites that were not permitted, others are not managed accordingly, and then others were supposed to be closed. Those that we then prioritized in this last financial year were those that needed to be licensed so that the municipalities could then dispose of waste in a proper manner without threatening soil contamination as well as possibly groundwater contamination. We then appointed service providers that were helping the municipalities to submit applications to the provinces. The provinces make the decision in terms of the issuing of that waste license for operating that landfill site, as well as approving the environmental impact assessment report. So there has been progress made in respect of draft reports, but then the authorizations have not yet been issued to authorize the use of those 57 sites. And there is a plan to catch up, and Mark can expand on the action plan to make sure that we change the state and improve in respect of managing that that area. And then, honourable members, we were also to update the National Implementation Plan for Stockholm a Convention, which is our international is part of our international obligation. The update report has been finalised, however, it's not yet approved. It has to go through the approval processes. And then the last one was the Minamata Convention Impact Study, wherein we had received the Global Environmental Facility, the GEF funding, to undertake the study, and there were delays both in respect of confirmation of funds and then the procurement process, which is why that is a red. But currently, there is work that is being undertaken to make sure that if we are to phase out mercury as a country, we have undertaken a study that confirms what are the implications, which are the industries that are going to be affected, what could then be the plan to ameliorate such a negative impact, whilst we also enable the phasing out of mercury as a country. Then the next area, honourable members, page 38, where again we have reported to the committee about asbestos land contamination. We are prioritising remediation of a number of hectares in order to improve the citizens and also the damage to land through secondary asbestos contamination. Here, honourable members, the funding was confirmed late in the year, and then we've had to follow through the implementing the appointment of service providers to assist with the implementation process. The minister has had further engagements also here with the Minister of Mineral Resources, wherein we are going to cooperate and look at resources that are also available, both for mine dump rehabilitation, but also including asbestos contaminated areas. So these are the reds in the program, under Program 7. And Mark, I would like you to add on the action plan to improve the state, if possible. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chair and honourable members. Good morning, Minister. Firstly, on the industry waste management plans, we had to undertake a two-step process of consultation, and on the first notice and call for industry waste management plans, we received a lot of comments from industry that given the economic pressures that they were facing and the challenges, that they requested an extension of time. And this year, I need to remind us also that this was the first industry-wide call for such plans in the country, and we have to deal with the number of challenges that the industry said they were facing, and in terms of that, the draft plans and the consultation process that was asked for in terms of an extension, we did grant them. DG, and then in terms of the unlicensed landfill sites, here again, as DG mentioned, we manage a process that of licensing the site, but it is an independent process where provinces license these municipal landfill sites. And despite putting a lot of pressure and managing the task team and all of that, capacity and challenges at the municipal level and a provincial level is a reality. And we have since fast-tracked the process, and we are at a point now where all 57 of the sites will be completely licensed by the end of this month. So some of the measures, the control measures, have been tightened up, and we fast-track the process now with full compliance by the end of this month. Thanks, DG. I think you've covered the rest.
I think I'm fine on just one. That was also part of the validation, the one on around the 8 instead of 10. The other two, of course, could not be validated at that time, so we received data to that effect after this. Yes. 10 of the 10 enterprises there on page 30, on the 8 sustainable natural resource-based enterprises established. So it was two were subjected to validation at the time. So I just wanted to make note that to be made note of as well.
Okay, thank you very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Can you welcome the presentation by the department? Also acknowledge the presence of the chairperson of DIC for the committee and all other honorable members that have joined us. You are most welcome. We can now engage. I'll hand over to honorable members to raise questions or comments on the presentations. Honorable members. What do you is there any harassment?
Sure, before the honourable members come in, I just wanted to get to the order of, is it on each or on all of them, anyhow?
I think what we should do is on each and everyone. You can just raise a question on any of the presentations to be noted. As long as you are aware of the page and the slides, you can help by mentioning such to make it easier also. Honorable. Okay. The whip, Honorable Prince, Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Khadebe, Honorable KK, Honorable Labaskahne, and Honorable Mlambo. Honorable Julius and Honorable Smith. Maybe in that order, Honorable members, that's Honorable Smith. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I take it that now that we said we can ask on all of them at once, it means one has got permission to ask as many as one could. So you want to put a rider in that regard?
Let's correct that. You can ask in any of the presentations, but we are going to restrict the question. We see this is a full house today, honorable members. Can we prioritize your question? I know you'll be having 10 or more than 10. Can you take your best three so that each and everyone should be able to, if there is still time, you can have a second bite, but prioritize your questions. If you've got many, many questions, others you can do in writing and submit to the two secretaries, then that will be forwarded to the department. Okay. I think that's clear, honorable members. Thank you.
I caused a problem to myself, Chair. I should have just asked and then you realize you have got a challenge and then manage the others. But now other members will have time to prioritize and I'm not sure if I'm in that position to do so. But let me try to do that. Perhaps on society, all I wanted to understand, I think the briefing is fine, but I wanted to understand on the position that we're saying cabinet has adopted, that we're not looking at immediate trading of the rhino, or which is fine, but then the question will be, what is emerging globally? Are we not going to face a particular pressure in there? And I'm not saying we should not stand our ground, but I'm saying what is it that we're standing against? And whether in SADC as well as the continent, we are mobilizing or canvassing our position to the extent that we could get to the convention, having solicited common ground with our neighbors and Africa as a continent. I just take it perhaps that would suffice in that particular regard, but just have to sneak this one in. I'm not sure the participation of parliamentarians, whether it's going to be on what is it? On sure of the page, but yes, the delegation and observers. We mentioned there often, but I just wanted it to come clear. Minister, when are we interacting with that? I've seen where you're indicating that there are 15 kind of activities that would be handled alongside the process. Now, whether ours is going to be on the 16th one, or kind of activity, or where exactly that will be featuring, but I think we'll talk to that. The second issue that or question that I want to raise, Chair, in terms of the air quality monitoring stations, wherein we have a challenge, and it is said that it's the issue for local government in the main, municipal capacity to engage with that. I just think we have got a bigger problem as government. And perhaps to keep on saying it's not our area of work, it should be municipalities, to some degree will just pose a problem to the country in that regard, or in the area of air quality monitoring. That also speaks to the issue about the licensing of the landfill site. For us to keep saying once we have licensed, we think we've done it, I think to a greater extent pose a problem. To the extent that we may need to look at the situation where other districts or provinces take charge of managing. Because licensing is one part, but managing those sites, I think to me, it's a serious problem which we need to consider engaging on. The last point is requested on the oceans and coast. The estuarine management plans, verification of evidence. I think there are quite a number of those wherein there's no conclusion, including on the shale gas, on many other projects that you might have done but not concluded on them. And you're saying it will be done in this year. But are we able to project when exactly? So that it's not like now it's a two-year kind of a process to engage on them. For now, I want to stop there and give other members an opportunity, but we are just happy that you have achieved most of your targets, demonstrating that you are a performing department in that particular regard, or comparatively speaking. Thanks a lot to both chairpersons.
Thanks very much. The next member is identified by Honorable Spaco. I don't know. I don't even list
you. Thank you.
So you know yourself. Yeah.
Thank you. I the two questions that I wanted to ask, it's already been asked. The landfill site, my favorite topic, as you know, and then the air quality. But on the air quality side, I would love to have a list of the working ones, some of the stations that is working, because some of our members in at the other side here in the Western Cape wanted to go and do oversight on some of those stations, so that we can have a sense, not only for the Western Cape, but overall, maybe which stations is working. I want to agree with the Honourable Member that, Minister, if we are going to wait for local government to address the issue of landfill sites, it's going to be a long waiting, and we are sitting with problems like
Comrade Kashmir was referring to, that it is a health risk for our poor people, because most of their landfill sites is in our area. And yeah, I would love the minister to really give attention. If it means that you must put certain things in place to keep the provinces or the districts to account on monitoring and implement certain things. The one question that I then will ask is about the funding. On page 3, reported that the funding for the Global Environmental Fund. Right? There is challenges. If we one can understand what the challenges is, because it's a very important. It's very important that we have to deal with those the climate change mitigation. You reported that you struggle with the funding. You got it? Yeah. It's on page 2. Okay, page 3. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Persons, Honorable Minister, the dishes and the delegation. Mine is on CITES. They're on page 7. Honorable Whip did ask partially about that, but I'm worried. Looking at the invitation, Honorable Minister, that it only speaks to the portfolio committee, not the with the select committee, if that can be corrected, so that the other members of the other house don't miss this important engagement. The other question, or the first question, will be on on program 1, administration. I didn't hear you talking about people with disability in the department. If we can get some information about that. And then on oceans and coasts, there's been an incident on media, and we wouldn't know whether those illegal fishers which were caught sometime last week were fishing the endangered species in our waters. And I would like to know about the role of the department in this regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on the first presentation, in terms of CITES, I just want to know what we want to do, what do we seek to achieve out of this CITES conference. The second one, Chair, is that what our strategic priorities that are going to be presented in the conference. The second question on the DG, we welcome the report, it's very good. They have achieved most of the target. And I want to know on the yellow target, how the department is going to take forward
or do they trigger this yellow target in the strategic plan or in the APPs as they presented to us in the budget recently? Thank you, Chair.
You should not be surprised when Honorable Sofako, the chairperson of the select committee, is walking out. He has to attend another meeting of the Joint Committee on Intelligence. So he's not going to be with us for the rest of this meeting. I just thought I must make information available to members. Who's the next one? Okay.
Thank you, Lord Chairperson. Chairperson, I will start with the first presentation on CITES. I would like to be enlightened with regards to the to the current judgment that we have, both from the Supreme Court of Appeal as well as from the High Court, which rule in favor of the domestic rhino sale in the country. Now we are, as a country, adopting recommendation 3 by the panel of experts. What does it say to the court judgment that we have received recently in the country? What does it say? Will it not be as if the government doesn't care about the judgments coming from the courts of the country? I would like, if the department has looked into that, it would not be in conflict with our domestic laws as well. Secondly, Chairperson, I would also would like to make comments about the presentation on the fourth quarter performance of the department. I think there are information that still needs to be consolidated. It won't make sense for us, because now I hear that the presenter was also saying that they are outstanding information that needs to be also consolidated so that they can give us the final performance of the department on the fourth quarter. So currently, I'm really appealing to the department to give us the full information so that we are able to play our oversight role as the politician, because we can't be able to hold the department accountable if we don't have relevant information. I think that will be the two chapters for now. Thank you.
Who is the next member? Oh, no, we'll take that.
Chairperson, Minister, DDG, all in all, thank you. My question is, what is the overall value of benefit sharing agreements that have concluded so far? And again, how many agreements and how much money? Thank you.
Thank you. The next member. Are we done with the list?
Yeah.
Okay, honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. It's very difficult for me to only ask 3 questions. The people in the select committee will know that, but let me try. My first question is on page 14. It's on the legal authorizations and compliance and enforcement. The actions that you indicated there, the 208 out of 277, I would like to know what kind of enforcement actions has been taken into consideration for this number. Was it notices of compliance, or is it what is the real action? Can you give us this? And then, is this 208 of the follow through of the process, or is it every step of the process? Say, for instance, you gave them a notice and say you have to comply. Is that one action? And then after a month or so, or the time that needs to lapse or whatever, the next notice, is that the next action, or is when you're busy with a company or organization or a mine or whatever it is, the larger action is that the action that you take through. What is that 200 grade? What does it indicate? And then still on that one is the things that you've seen and that you are aware of, is that representing really the contraventions and the transgressions on that level. Then the second question is on page 19. It's a green area, it's nothing yellow or red or anything, but I need to know, the National Framework of Marine Spatial Planning has been approved. That's a green thing, which is a good thing, which we all think is necessary. Now, also, the department makes, refer a lot to, let me just give that, oceans and coasts, to marine protected areas. Now, I would like to know, how does the department get together, how does this work? If the Department of Environmental Affairs in this plan that you've been approved, how did you go about when there's certain areas that's in very important for protection in the marine area, but it's also a very important area for other departments such as fisheries and or mining, where they would not like it to be protected? What is the process and the procedures that the department is following to sort that out? And maybe, Chair, there is another issue that maybe we should ask the department to do a joint sitting with the portfolio committee and the select committee on that one, and give us a proper presentation on the spatial plan and the areas that's included and excluded, and the preference of the other departments and so on. And then the last one is page 37. The department gave us an explanation on the reasons why the industry said that they need some more time. Was that really just economic, or was the time, did the industry turn up at the public participation sessions? What was the kind of public participation that the department initiated? Was it only in writing? Was it meetings? What kind of things was that? And then I would like to know, thank you for that information that you said that the unauthorized landfills will be licensed at the end of this year, and the role that municipalities and the provinces play in the independent licensing of those landfills. Now, my question is, by the end of this month, you said it will all be licensed. Whose role is it, and who carries the cost of the monitoring, the ongoing compliance to the license in the municipalities and the provinces? Because it's very good, and we are all very excited and glad that at the end of this month now they comply. The question is sustainable compliance. Who's responsible for that? How is it going to work? And what is the budget for that? And the rest I will have to put in writing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Was that the last question? We still have got more members, so I didn't pick up.
Yeah.
Okay, you can come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need the department to elaborate on the challenges regarding the time frame for grievance cases. What are the challenges, and what plans are there in place to reduce these challenges in the department? Secondly, the interaction of this department with other departments is still a problem for me and other spheres of government, because environmental affairs goes all over the show. for instance, and I want to emphasize it, because we are from the National Council of Provinces, there will always be local issues that we mention, and that make us different from the NA especially. And I 2 weeks ago I mentioned this issue about acid mine drainage, especially on the West Rand Basin, where you have water streaming out into the Tweelope straight down to Hartbeesfontein and other also to other streams to the Vaal River. Now, there's a danger to the aquatic life, fauna, flora in that area. It's actually eating away at a wired fence at the Krugersdorp Nature Reserve, where the lion enclosure is. So, very dangerous situation. Now, I know the department will say it's not our problem, it is mining. You know, it's maybe forest and fishing. Oh, but where do you come in as environmental affairs? Because I've been asking this question, and I've been sent from pillar to post, and I'm glad the minister is here, so that we can finally track down this, because I've been asking this question for 2 years without success. And, you know, we really need to find where can we get answers and where can we have solutions to these problems. The last one, Chairperson, the interaction with the private sector and government, other departments, local government again, in terms of innovative, environmentally friendly production in our country. I can think of one example here, Minister, through your chairperson, where you have a produce called hemp. It grows the best in unused mining areas, and that's where this department can come in, save or conserve the environment by doing such projects. My question is, do you have these things in place? Are you open for any proposals on this environmentally friendly production in terms of working with private sector and other government departments like housing? Hemp can be used for building houses, for instance, material for building houses. So that is basically my question, not specifically on hemp, but how do you go about with these proposals? Are you open for these proposals? Do you have such innovative proposals at this moment relating to environment, other spheres of government, private sector, and reducing the impact of like mining and other negatives on our environment? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member, sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to introduce myself, as I didn't have an opportunity earlier, I'm Bayer Smith, part of the Select Committee representing Limpopo. I also got three questions. The first question would be related to a presentation that we got a while ago on the game trade and going further, you know, the biodiversity economy or whatever. There was some fancy name for it. I can't remember exactly. But, you know, going beyond game trade, you know, the whole industry as a whole. But specifically around game trade and the constraints around legislation and regulations that is making it really difficult for that industry to grow, which actually has got a great potential for job creation and, you know, growing the economy as well. You know, for example, if a game farmer wants to sell his game to the farm next door, you know, he needs a permit. If you want to sell to game to a farmer in the next door or the you know the province next door, you need two different permits, and each one has got their own permit system. So I wanted to know What is the department's progress in terms of addressing this? Because there was some commitments at that time towards doing, attending to that specific constraints that actually relates to agriculture in a way, because it forms part of farming as a whole. Obviously, without compromising the risk of disease spread and all of those type of things, and illegal trade and all of that. My second question is related to also a question I think I asked in the previous year, which happens at Falls Freight Mine, that I wanted to know how the Department of Environmental Affairs gave the go-ahead for prospecting rights within an ecologically sensitive area that is the Nails Flay River system, that is a unique system in South Africa. I think it's only one of two systems that actually the water pushes back in the river in a certain time throughout through the year. I think the other one is the St. Lucia, if I'm not mistaken. But there is this speculation that there's other mines who also want to mine, further on going towards the Mogalakwena River system that is actually an extension of the Nails Flay River system. And then how are we going to ensure that mining, because it seems like the Department of Mineral Resources have got the bigger weight here in terms of that and pushing through, especially for mines. We are not against, growing the economy and all of that, but it must be taken, in a responsible way. In the same breath, the model around creating a fund for civil society which at this stage have to pay battles to protect the environment on behalf of all South Africans at their own cost, using the American model where there's a fund available when there's such conflicts where government actually assists these individuals put their point out. Then my third question is related to, we've got this compliance in terms of dumping sites. Do we also have compliance in terms of sewer work systems of municipalities? Because as I raised this issue in last, I think it was last week or the week before, when we also had engagement, that the municipalities are actually polluting our river system so badly that that water can't be used in a lot of cases for agricultural purposes, for irrigation and so forth. And that will have a big impact. I mean, if we look at the NDP and the 1 million jobs that must be created through agriculture, how is that going to happen if we make it even more difficult for agriculture to survive by polluting that very scarce resource, which is our water? Is there such in place? If not, might that be on the agenda of the department to maybe get that in place and make sure that compliance actually also takes place? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, honourable member. I think we have exhausted all the questions. Maybe we should hand over to the department to respond to all the questions. But there's just some clarity that I would like to get also from my side. When a gentleman was adding, you must pardon me, I'm so new here, I don't know your names, all of you. So when you were adding to what the DG was saying, you spoke about the industry having requested for the relaxation of certain requirements to comply because of the current economic conditions. I just want you to elaborate further on that, on the nature of the requirement to relax that, and what impact is that going to have in terms of the requirements to comply with whatever that you have stipulated. But also, just lastly, I was reading that there was a High Court decision which was almost like an affirmation of Isimangaliso. I'm sure you are aware of the recent court judgment. Can you take this opportunity just to brief us on that and what it means for the department? I'm going to hand over to the Honorable Minister, and then you will direct how the questions should then be responded to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and we must appreciate the questions from Honorable Members, also the statements expressed by some of our Honorable Members on the work done by the Department, the fact that we could achieve most of our targets. We want to achieve all, indeed, and we will strive to do that and continue to do so. There are questions that we are going to be able to respond to Rao, but I think there's one or two that will probably require that we do some spade work, unless not having consulted with the team here whether they may have ready answers now. But in that instance, it probably also would need to be written so that it's actually written information. For instance, on the number of landfill sites that are functional and the stations that are functional, we may need to just come back with that very clear response on which ones are functional and where are they situated. The second one is related to the biodiversity economy, where bioprospecting permits have actually happened successfully, and the value thereof to derived to communities that have actually benefited. Unless, Shoni, if you have that figure now, he does have it on his feet. I take it that is ever since we have had ADS, which is in 2009. Be that as it may, even if he has that figure, we still have to write it and send it formally to the committee chair, because we prefer to have some written stuff. So on those issues, I think there might be the third one that I may have missed. But just starting with the first issue, I am going to keep indicating also where I think Honourable Members, team members can come in on some of, and they can get ready in the meantime. For instance, on your issue related to the industry waste that Mark, his name is Mark Gordon, Mark would have to speak to, can still get ready in the meantime. I do have an answer, but I just want you to repeat what you said and give a bit of detail. The issue about the position adopted by South Africa of not looking for immediate trading of horn is asked by Honorable Makubele. And I think another Honorable Member asked that Honorable Hadem. Yes. They are more or less the same line of question. I'll touch on those two just in a nutshell. What do we stand against? What is happening worldwide and what is happening around our neighbors and so forth? First, those three questions. We, by the way, let me start by saying that South Africa is the only country in the world that has got this highest number of rhino, the population, the only. We have almost 21,000-22,000. The next country that follows South Africa is with just under 3,000, and that's Namibia. And the two countries are on the continent. So it's for that reason that we are a target of rhino poaching. And it therefore stands to reason that we then thought it is important that we investigate the possibility of trading with rhino horn internationally, let me emphasize, internationally, as part of the measures of fighting rhino poaching. Because, let me just explain quickly, the reason why we thought that it is important is because we do know that those who are looking for the rhino horn do everything in their power and anything at any given time to enter our parks, to lure our young people in communities that are very poor, to get them to come and shoot, walk into the park and shoot and so forth, and kill a rhino for purpose of getting a rhino come what may. So because it's such a needed thing, we wanted, and this is, by the way, a black market, we wanted it to get into surface and resurface. We still don't know who they are selling it to, the actual business, because it's not a shop. They don't have license to rent, to sell and run and this as a market, wherever they are doing it. So it's difficult then to know who you are actually working with, who you can deal with, and who you should deal with. So we then found that important. I'm emphasizing that this is as part of the tools to fight rhino poaching. Now, it also stands to reason that as that happens, the 35% or 30% of people who are investing in rhino, who are in the private sector, also get a real, real serious knock. And it is for that reason, therefore, that they then took us to court when the moratorium was put in place. Way back, it was in 2008, 2009. That's the year it was put. And there's a strange correlation, may I say, that the year that we began to lose something like four rhinos and so forth being shot and killed for their horn was more or less 2008, 2000. So there's a strange correlation. We have not got conclusive evidence that this is actually caused by the fact that the moratorium was put, and therefore it could mean that people have always been selling it external anyway. But we don't have that conclusive evidence, but there is this correlation. So then we put these measures, amongst others. I'm not going to list all of the requirements and the terms of reference. Amongst others, we said the team committee of inquiry must look at community involvement. I think we can explain it later, or when we have to bring that report here to the portfolio committee and the joint committee if we need to, but we can also send it in writing. It is also on the website, by the way, we have put it, this committee of inquiry report. We then said they must look at the involvement of communities. We said they must look at the involvement, I mean the issue of who we could do trade with. On the other side, in order to resurface the countries where the users are and so forth and so forth. We know Vietnam is one of them. The East Asian market or areas, countries are some of those, which ones there could be an arrangement with them. We said there must be a stock, an understanding of our stockpile, by the way, work that we're doing in the meantime. May I also say that whilst I'm here, to use these two examples of why this decision was made as we have made, as cabinet has made, is because we do believe very strongly that you cannot approach CITES as a conference and say we want to trade on rhino horn when you actually don't know what your stockpiles are in its entirety. Because we're doing the stockpiles collation of the entire country. We do know the stockpiles that belong to government, because those are being audited every year. They are part of our assets. But we were in the middle of doing, not quite at the beginning, but almost to conclude, when we had to make this decision of trading or not. And we didn't believe that by the end of September, when CITES come, we would have concluded the stockpile. Now, you can't approach a shop as a place and say, we want to sell our stockpile, when you don't quite know what is your inventory. What are you selling when you don't quite know? So it's one of the things that we said, the work must be done in concluding that work that we need to do. Even over and above the community work and so forth. Or in other words, we are trying the safety and security measure plan. We still don't have a fully implemented safety security plan, in other words. That comes from the justice cluster, the criminal justice system cluster. We do have the measures that we are applying right now with the criminal justice cluster, but not a fully fledged strategy that is under implementation. So you need to approach crisis with that in mind, and that's what one of the observations that we made at the time when we concluded this work that we're doing. So then the committee said, amongst other things, these three that I've mentioned, there are five things or six things that they mentioned that still need some work. Then they said, we do not think that it will be intelligent enough for us at this point in time to say, let us approach CITES. Well, of course, you will knock your head against the wall. Not that we are afraid of it, but what is the point when you then can work harder and really work to realize all the things that are glaringly standing in front of you and really get a house in order so that when you go there, you go standing with confidence and everything else that would have been done and concluded that you are now facing the world. By the way, remember there are many other countries that play the world, coming to the question of what are the views around the world. There are many countries that are still very much opposed to this thing. So it takes one or two countries to raise their flag and say we are opposed to this thing. And on the basis of what we would have been motivated with holes, of course. So it's better to have closed holes and rather have no country standing up with having anything to point at, we believe. So this is why we... if you go back a little bit, you are not running away. You are taking more energy to do that work that you need to do. So that's part of it. But our neighbors, we have had our neighbor, the SADC country meeting set. And at that meeting, we were not alerted that Swaziland was going to be proposing to submit a proposal. We learned subsequent to that. And we haven't really quite engaged with Swaziland, but we do think that we are going to have to engage with them because they also have to be supported by us when we see their state of readiness. Otherwise, I think if we may want to think with our minds properly, it may be that we don't know how much the stockpiles of Swaziland is. It may be including the stockpiles of South Africa. We don't know. And we don't want to see such a situation emerging much later in the day, when we are told that it's Swaziland's proposal and yet it's stocks that are coming from South Africa. So that as well we need to engage on with them. So the issue about the court's order, it's about moratorium on the sale of rhino horn internally in South Africa. In other words, me buying a rhino horn, selling it to a chairperson, selling it to yourself, men, honor, or whatever, to whatever, we are exchanging and selling amongst ourselves. It probably is for the symbol of ornament and things like that, because you can't do the kinds of things that we learn. The horn is being sold to the East Asian market to do here at home, because we don't use it for such things. Here it will be just as a symbol of appreciation or on you know, those kinds of things. You have it like you are a woman or you are a man, you have the symbol of this thing. So it's not quite for that purpose. And indeed, our argument has always been that, well, the water is water under the bridge now, that if we have the sale of oil internally in the country, yes, people get money. Maybe, yes, it supports our people who are dealing with are breeding rhino and so forth. But to what an extent does it help them, because it's not allowed to be traded with internationally? You see what I mean? So that has always been our argument. We still can't get past this question as to what is it that they propose. Unless if there could be somehow where these things are also being sold somehow externally. But be that as it may, we don't think that there is any connection between the court judgment or anywhere where we are negating the court judgment with this decision. So the two are actually quite delinked. I thought I should be a little bit longer on that one because it's quite an involved thing. So the issue about...
The court says you can trade with Rhino Horn within the country, not internationally.
Yes, sir, because internationally for you to trade, you've got to get permission from CITES. And CITES means that for those 182 countries that are meeting there, they must agree to that. But also, when they agree to that, the reason why CITES has put this on this order is because Rhino has actually been extinct in many countries of the world. It's only in a very few South Africa on the African continent. And that brings me then to what is the reason for having the objective of having CITES. CITES is a convention that regulates how we do trade on fauna and flora only. Because we human beings are a danger to ourselves more often than not, let's face it. We can get into the ocean and finish all the sharks without even regard of what we are doing. So this is a trade that actually, from time to time, for instance, you see the listed species of our own, the mountain zebra that we had listed a few years ago, is because we were seeing that it was actually almost going down in numbers. So we requested a listing of that so that then we work with other countries. Anybody who trade on it would have to be a controlled trade that is managed by the CITES authorities. So, Honorable Nyambi, that's the reason why we have that kind of a convention. It's really, now we're down listing it to CITES Appendix 2 so that it can be traded with now that the numbers have gone up. If the numbers are a little bit low, we are having a problem right now, for instance, with the shark. There are countries that are saying to us, let's uplift the shark species, two of the shark species. We know that Namibia relies much more on those shark species. And then those who are Sri Lanka and Madagascar and other countries who are saying, let's uplift it. They have not quite had an engagement with Namibia. We have asked them to go and engage Namibia, for them to hear how they can help Namibia, not for Namibian trade to be killed, because they rely mainly on that. Because you also still have to do what we call the study, the instrumental finding study. So that it's a scientific study that gets done to determine the numbers that may be dwindling or not dwindling, or how that can actually, like we did with this mountain zebra, how it can actually be helped to get back into numbers that are there. So it's a body that deals with that kind of action to manage ourselves against ourselves, help manage ourselves against ourselves. The participation of MPs, I think Gigi will touch on that particular matter, let me just but we would really love to have at all times, when we mean MPs, I think it might be an error, we do mean even both houses. It's not just the one house, but I think the days and so forth of participation of the activities of the site events will be dealt with. Dr. Maikiso will deal with the estuarine plans about no conclusions. I want to come into the landfill side issue. In particular, what is it that we need to do as DIA? It's also related to the air quality stations, the monitoring stations. You see, colleagues, it's quite a dilemma that we always find ourselves in that you have a constitution in South Africa that lists the schedules in 4 and 5 of the constitution, the functions that belong to spheres of government, and they have to be performed at that level. Over and above that, the same constitution says, section 158 of the constitution says that these other spheres will support the local spheres, and the spheres support one another in that manner. The national supporting provinces and supporting, but it also says how you can take over powers when there is no performance. It's not just willy-nilly and arrive in a rambambasport of Moses Kotane and I say, I have arrived because I see your landfill site is not quite functional, so we are coming to take over this function or work with you. So we really try to interact as best as we can in support using Section 168 of our constitution. Even that is very selective and it's very clear. It doesn't say you make decisions on your own. The municipalities will make decisions. The municipalities will have to gather data where they have to gather data. You support, and support means real support. So in that support, it's difficult therefore to say, hey, you didn't do this, therefore you are, we think that do this, do that. You can't even instruct. It's support with functions, with finances and so forth. As a matter of fact, we're saying too, Mark, and sometimes remember, this is actually officials to officials. An official to official who's saying that you don't have a data, please submit. For instance, let me just cite one of the examples that we're discussing just this past Friday at our MINMEX with our MECs, that 11 of the Wellington site, the licenses could have been issued as we speak now, but data has not yet come forth, the final data. Some of the data should have been processed to the provincial government. Information about the landfill site, where work has been concluded. Our provincial government should, where the MECs or the HODs sign off the landfill site, and then get the first of all the license given. So that particular matter is a very sensitive and murky area, if you really like. But because somebody in the municipality didn't take that function, that information to the NEC to have a whole package, consider all the HOD and sign off and permit this landfill site, then it's not done. This is what we're saying in interacting with them. There was an undertaking that by this coming end of this month, it's the end of this month, they would have then, the NECs would see to it that they go to those municipalities and do what we cannot do. We're hopeful that they will be able to do that on their own. So it's really that kind of a difficulty, honorable members. Until ourselves here at a government level and at a parliamentary level, we say, how do we look at these functions that are cross-cutting, and how would we be able to use support beyond support of talking but also involve the doing part of it with the municipalities. That's actually the issue. And that then brings me to the issue that Honourable Member Julius asked about the water issues and the AMD and so forth. And I think there will be better explanation probably now. But I just want to say that our function as a department, let me just say first of all, we have what is called outcome 10 of government. We have 10 outcomes, Musne. 10 outcomes. Outcome 10 deals with natural resource base, taking care of our natural resource base. If you look at outcome 10, I have a document here thereof. It's where DEA chairs a whole host of other departmental, and I think that takes care of honorable member from Western Cape's question, a whole host of other departments that are participants in the outcome 10, where we are saying we all keep track of, let's say, how are we faring with the dumping in the water courses, the cleanliness of all your water courses, all the bigger catchment areas. Then Department of Water Affairs, because it is their function to ensure that they monitor daily, weekly, monthly, the water quality, for instance, because it is their function, they need to know where does effluent come in, when, and so forth and so forth. They have what is called the blue scorpions, the police that police water. We have what is called the green scorpions. The green scorpions go elsewhere, but they support. We will only support water affairs blue scorpions when they need us to support them with certain capacities and information and so. But where is their space? We don't all go there and gather. In this instance, where it's only pure water affairs function, we will go there. We will never say that it's not our function. We will support them where they need us to support. But the relevant department to go to, in that instance, it is water affairs. They also lead on AMD. As you saw them, they were actually launching the cleaning of the water treatment plants that were going into the AMD. In the ocean space, they go there too. We work with them as well. But we put regulations, we put standards, we put whatever is necessary for compliance purposes on the ocean side. Why? Because we manage the ocean side. They manage the rivers and the catchment area side. So when you come to the ocean side, it is mainly us
who have to be there. That's why you'll see, even where there's a need to react with the enforcement and agencies and the water quality management and taking samples in the ocean side of what comes through the estuaries, it will be there that goes into that space. So, but all of us then work within the cluster of the outcome 10, including the DMR. We have agreed as government that we will allow the Department of Minerals to issue permits where it's necessary, even on functions that were not necessarily authorizations like EIA, Environmental Impact Assessment, like roads, supporting roads to a mine and so forth. They used to license only mines. But over and above that, we then agreed that there must be a one-stop shop where they, because we used to, developers used to wait for years and years when they are waiting just for a license of a road, a license of a water treatment plant, a license of what, after they have acquired a license of mining. So we have put all those together under one authority, which is mining. Then they do the authorization. But even after they've done that, the appeals authority in all of them is the Minister of Environment. But they use also the Environmental Management Act with its regulations, no longer like before, where they used to use those that are in the MPRDA, that's the Act of Minerals. So even if they do that, we still connect somehow. So you will notice that the compliance, for instance, which is information that you've got to give to honourable member from Western Cape, the compliance notices of 200 and something, they will then also come with that information about which ones are those, because you would find that some of them relate to us, some relate to water affairs, some relate to, it will be different kinds of things. Some would be air quality related, some would be and how far we are. But the issue here is that we should have what is called administrative justice in South Africa. That of giving people an opportunity to respond to certain questions first and get them to comply. If they are not willing to comply, not unable, if they are unwilling and un-whatever, then we pounce on them. If they are willing to comply, we put terms as to when and by when to actually get to comply. There are certain things that might be difficult even for them. For instance, let's say it's a whole host of what is this thing, the dam, slime dam, that was built during donkey years, many, many, many years ago. It's not lined. What we do is to say stop operating this landfill site, the slime dam, because it's not lined, so that there shouldn't be any further movement and whatever. But to say that the rectification could be to move to another area where you put a proper slime dam that is now properly lined, and no longer use that one, so that you do commission that one. And that process doesn't take a short space of time. Let's all agree, because we also need to be sensitive to these things. Whilst we are pushing for environmental compliance and so forth, we're also using the sustainable development tool that we have within our space, and ensuring that at the same time we protect the people. Where we will not agree is where, Honorable Chairperson, there was once in my lifetime as Environment Minister and MEC, is only once, I think, or twice that I can remember saying to no, a big no to a developer. This person was coming from Italy, coming to set up a factory in Northwest Province. We had only two at the time qualified people of air quality in that particular space who were coming to, who could evaluate the air particles and so forth for us in the country. One of them did the evaluation, one commented on the report. And upon investigation, they both came out and say, no to this development. Even the smallest particles that get inhaled, people are going to get lung cancer. So it can't be allowed. We said no, a big no to it. And then there was an appeal. We did an appeal. I asked the second person to, we had to go and ask for a specialist. Now we have specialists in the country. From abroad to come in and evaluate that report. They evaluated that report, we said no to that development. Today it has never been allowed. So I'm trying to illustrate, honorable members, that even where you see us saying let's take our time, is where we know that it is not quite so terribly harmful to the lives of our people. Where it is, we say a big no. And a big no is a big no, it never happens. So like where we're saying a big no to any development on a wetland. It's not quite our function. But if water affairs was to allow anybody on a wetland and minerals was to allow anybody, we go to them and say it's a big no. we can't kill the wetlands. So let's take DG. I thought I should deal with those two issues that are meant to just come in if anything left.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. I'll quickly run through a few and then allow my colleagues to finish their questions. Just on the context of this report, the fourth quarter report, honourable members, is a report of the end of the financial year. However, validation and verification is in process until we submit to the Auditor General end of May. So 31st of May, I'm submitting a report with all the, what you call, the evidence and the financial statement for them to audit. This is why they then take 2 months to audit and come back and give us an outcome. So we will then table the same reports when everything has been verified at the end of July, August, so that the honourable members can then interact with the final verified report. So at this point in time, even when the minister is presenting, when we're presenting as a department, that's why I said on those ones that are still amber, yes, there is a report that says they've met the target, but we still have to really validate. If we don't have that what you call evidence that validates, I have no, or in the discipline of how we manage performance in the department, we will not change that until the evidence is available. So just, but definitely then when we table, it will be a document that has got a verification of that fourth quarter report. So just in terms of the status of the fourth quarter report. And then coming back to just the few matters, Elizabeth will talk to the minister said that we can still provide the list of all the quality monitoring stations, but she will quickly outline which ones that are reporting and compliant currently, and also will provide the landfill sites information. Oceans, honourable members, are saying the estuarine management plan is indicated as correct. However, it's just the evidence. So Monday will not have to report. We'll take it off based on the fact that they've met the target after we have verified. The question on the GEF, the Global Environmental Facility funding, works. It has got its own rules. For instance, every 4 years, we get an allocation as a country. And South Africa is also a part donor country. We do contribute to, we make certain payments every year to the GEF. And then they would give us an allocation for certain windows, biodiversity, the climate, the chemicals window, and so on. However, we need an accredited agency that must access those funds. We don't access them directly as the department. Though we are the focal point, we have to submit those. We have been using now the Development Bank of South Africa, the United Nations Development UNDP program, and even UNEP and the World Bank are the accredited institutions. So those are, when we talk about delays, it's basically those processes that we are entering into between ourselves and the GEF Secretariat in order to be able to then process and use those funds in order to meet our targets on the as outlined in our APP. Now coming to the question, honourable chair, around the court judgment on Isimangaliso. Isimangaliso wetland is a wetland that was degraded. There were forests, lots of pine trees, lots of gum trees, and also there was dredging of that wetland by farmers and other industries upstream, and it did not have water, and it did not have the biodiversity, the bird species that you see there currently. So it's over the years since this declaration, we have, one, undertaken scientific studies around what are the impacts of the use of the 4x4s in the dunes, what is the impact of dredging the wetlands, and out of that report, for instance, on the dredging or opening the mouth when there is no water, farmers want then the water to flood up so that they are able to access it and use it for their farming activities. But then they don't think about the other farmers, either downstream or upstream of the catchment areas and communities. So suddenly, because of the drought, they wanted to re-dredge the wetland after it has been rehabilitated and the mouth has been closing. And that is a matter that then was taken by those farmers to court. And now they've lost the matter, and the judgment is that for purposes of the functionality and the conservation activities that are realized out of the wetland, therefore it has to be maintained as such. We cannot allow those activities that would degrade the wetland. And I don't have the actual judgment now, but I'm just summarizing the principle of what the outcome is, and we can still make that available. The people with disability, as honourable member, we have reported that we met in quarter four. We were sitting at 2.7% of people with disability, and therefore we exceeded the 2%, which is the public service target, and we are one of the few government departments, 11 at the time, that are able to meet the people with disability category of officials in the sector. And if I were to quickly then say, 21 of the officials are at lower levels, between level 4 and 8. 22 officials in middle management, 4 officials at senior management level. So in all the categories, also we are doing our best to actually meet the target, and we can still do much more with the efforts that we are putting in. Honourable member, just on the matter of the department's role has been outlined by Minister, but I think Monde can also talk to the matter related to illegal fishers. I will quickly then talk to the last item on the grievances. Yes. The matter on grievances is the function of allowing people, every official, when you're involved in a grievance, if I request postponement with reasons, it has to be adhered to. So it is those considerations that tend to then make the time frames that we go beyond what we seek to as the target, and we are standardizing we've standardized the process, and we hope we can still improve on the on our threshold in respect of the average number of days it takes. But each case is peculiar and unique, unfortunately, in a sense, from the legal experience that I've had looking at the various cases that the department has had to deal with in terms of grievances. But we have a plan to improve, and hopefully we will be able to meet our targets in future. On innovation, honourable members, the question is that you asked. We are a department that is open to innovation, and we have a green economy strategy that we can present its elements, which is also about sustainable production and consumption, and therefore any initiative that could enhance our ability to give effect to those outcomes and our targets around sustainable production as a country, we should be able to look at, to consider them. And we normally have engagements with municipalities and provinces about what are the areas, new areas that we should look at investing together on. We also have an opportunity through the Green Fund. The Green Fund, we open call for proposals so that people come, whether you're coming from private sector, with an innovation that we can consider, that if it is going to give us the kind of outcomes, whether it's in the area of clean technology, whether it's in the area of sustainable production, and so on and so on. So there are opportunities for us to then explore those and also test them and pilot, so that we can prove that those initiatives are then going to give us the outcome. Minister,
sorry, Chair, can I just to embellish this point? Hemp, that honourable member used as an example, and I just am saying it's an example of many other things. If you go to Maponya Mall now, you have a store that sells hemp products, olive lotions, perfumes, even the material of clothing and so forth. This came as a result of a thorough research that was done quite a while ago from the agricultural plant as part of a biodiversity economy done by CSIR, and we're led by our scientific authority at CSIR. We now have just come out of a 5-week period or where we were planning utilization of our national resources as in species like the plants and other, some say, as it would be said, in benefit sharing. There are already people who are planning to use crocodile fat. Some are using goudia, some are using, so we have got those, it's a list of about how many, children, 37, share through you. 37 or so species. 25 that are being put through cultivation now, but a number of them are still being investigated. These are the your likes of the rooibos, your goudia, your aloe, and so forth. So we are listing them, and we've already made a request that in our new agreement with the EU, the trade between South Africa and EU, because we are finalizing another one, we be allowed to add some of the few. So we're having a bilateral with trade and industry. Before cabinet of tomorrow, we have to conclude that matter. Actually, the memo is here to look at those. So we are innovating on the various species that are there. It's not only in the space of plant species, but in the technology, in the climate change sector, as DG says, that we do running the and managing the green economy, the Green Climate Fund. So we look at those proposals. But more often than not, we'd encourage members, if there are proposals, also to work with other funds like your IDC, your Small Business Development Funds, and so forth, because it's not everything that we can fund from our side as well, but we are open to innovation. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Minister. And then Rian will come in on the compliance note. Just my last comment on the question raised by the Honourable Member on in respect to sewer works. Mark will talk to the dam site, but sewer treatment or water treatment works are authorized by Environmental Affairs through the EIA process. Okay? So when an environmental impact assessment is done and there is a record of decision, there are conditions that go with that permit. And therefore, the management of that water treatment work has to be adhered to in terms of those conditions. And Water Affairs with the Blue Scorpions, they have the Blue Drop Program and the Green Drop Program. And the Green Drop Program is very much about what the state of that water that is sewer water that is treated afterwards before it goes to the river system. And if they don't adhere to that, or a plant or an operation or a municipality does not adhere to that, there must be consequences. And both our enforcement functions then do tend to work together in determining or when there are people that are complaining about the pollution of the river or even the post water treatment works to the water systems and water courses. And then lastly the matter on game farming. Honourable Member, Shoni will talk to this. I think you were referring to the wildlife economy. And yes, certainly when the Minister mentioned that there was a planning a process that was undertaken, which is called a PAGISA, which follows a big fast results methodology with the game industry or wildlife industry as well as government and the various provinces and some of the non-governmental institutions. And that process has attempted to map the processes that are involved. What is it that is a problem in terms of regulatory efficiency, and what can be done to improve that situation, both in amending legislation but also in simplifying execution processes and permitting processes. And we can then talk to that when we brief the committee on the details of exactly how are we going to ease the manner of doing business in that area without compromising the controls that are also required in terms of managing the species and the movement of the species from one place to another. And because there is a certain ethos around conservation that we still have to preserve in respect of preventing unnecessary hybridization, but also where it happens, it is also allowed in a context of intensive breeding methodology. And Shoni can give further details in that regard. Can I ask Rian first and then Monde to explain a bit, and then you, Elizabeth? Then.
Yeah, as they do that, can you please just be very brief? Because the select committee, I understand, they still have to process two other issues. Yeah, so that we may possibly adjourn in the next 15 minutes or so.
Thank you very much, Chair. The question from Honourable Labiskakhni relating to page 14 on the actions issued and the follow-through, technically, as you've mentioned. Those two items must be read together. The second one is specifically the actions, the 245, are the actions that have been taken, which is either a notice or a directive or a pre-notice that can be given. So one company might have two actions, a maximum of two actions that is included in that 245. But if you look at the follow-through specifically, you have to look at the 75%, which is the top one. Just remember, when we issue notices for compliance or directives, in that notice there might be five areas they have to look at, or four areas. So there you can see, out of all our instructions and notices we've issued, we've achieved 75% compliance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. DJ, I would like to briefly go back to Honorable Makubela's question, because he may have been asking both about 1516 and 1415. I noticed in 1415 we had one outstanding EMP, which was the Etegwini. I would assure Honorable Makubela that indeed has been developed. And then on the vessels, think it's unprecedented to have 9 foreign vessels getting into South African waters and them being found without permits. 10. Previously, we've had foreign vessels, the Japanese, Taiwanese vessels in South African waters, but they had permits to fish outside the South African waters. And I must say, honorable members, that we were told, or we learned last night, that they were found to have had squid on board. Now, squid is the most important fishery in the Eastern Cape. And the Department of Environment Affairs is concerned, in addition to the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, as the honorable member asked, are there endangered animals that could have been in the catch? Now, in that part of the world, a lot of the lionfish have been over-exploited, and therefore it is possible, but I do not know for sure that there were endangered fishes in the catch. And then the honorable member also asked what role the Department of Environment Affairs played in this kind of work. Honorable members will recall that Lab 4 in Oceans Economy, Hakisa, is called Marine Protection and Governance. And Environment Affairs then coordinates government department stakeholders that are involved in law enforcement, whether it is South African Police Services, South African Navy. So we do play a role. Then there was a very difficult question from Honorable Lapskakni about how the MSPs, how the Marine Spatial Planning is going to work with protected areas. My immediate reaction, Honorable Member, is that the Minister has gazetted a Marine Spatial Plan bill, which will be debated, and we will definitely interact with the Honorable Members in months to come on that. But I also want to make this comment, Honorable Lavisca. It would be great if we were operating with a clean slate, where there were no marine protected areas that exist and no prospecting licenses that had already been given. However, that reality is not there, and that we're going to have, the department is going to have to work together with other departments and stakeholders and find negotiate so that the country gets a proper dispensation. She also asked how the different departments were working. The short answer is that we have a Marine Spatial Planning Working Group that meets regularly, and that has been holding workshops, including those addressed by international experts. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm just going to talk quickly to the two air quality questions that were asked. First, we have, in terms of the numbers, we have 100 air quality monitoring stations, and 20 of them are meeting data requirements. In the Western Cape, we have got 7, and 2, the one in George and Hout Bay, are meeting the data recovery requirements. The City of Cape Town has got 6, and the one in Molten is the one that is meeting the data recovery requirements. On the second question on capacity and support, I think the Minister and DDG has spoken to that. But just to say that we will be sending letters to the respective municipalities that the stations are not meeting the recovery requirements. And that's because we understand that even though we can put it under the umbrella of capacity, the situation on the ground differs from one municipality to the other. For example, others have just indicated that they have the money, but they've got procurement issues because of the length of that, and then it affects the number of days where we actually have data. We are also working on the monitoring strategy that we look into all these 100 monitoring stations, which ones are very, very strategic that we need to pump resources on. And lastly, we've got our DG has just approved the project to do an asset management system, which is an electronic system that allows us to see what are the problems at each station remotely from the department, and therefore assist effectively. Thank you.
Okay, on two issues. One, the one that DG already covered, I think when we talk to the biodiversity economy in broadly, looking at all aspects, we'll be able to qualify for it. So on the permitting side, it has to be looked at in as a package that involves common standards, that involves certification mechanisms, that involves a number of issues that the norms and standards that try to standardize the approaches between in dealing with permitting system, and also how we reduce the number of days. So there's a we've spoken to this, and that's the issue that we're working on. On the BAP side, I may not go to all the details. Suffice to say that from 2009 to 2015, there were 36 BAPs, bulk prospecting permits that were concluded. This is an elaborate process to come to that number, with 33 million rands plus, or 33.9 million rands monetary benefits directly to source communities. There are breakdowns in terms of how that has been, which if it's required, then we can look at. But those are the numbers as we speak now. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Very, very quickly on the question on landfill sites. I think it's suffice to say that in terms of the licensing of these sites, some of these licenses that they issued are actually closure licenses. So it calls for a closure of a site with conditions of monitoring and improvement, rehabilitation, remediation, and all of that. And also to say that we had a backlog of about 341 sites, and we have significantly reduced that down to 57 now in about 2.5 years, and which will be totally eradicated by the end of this month. And I think in terms of the compliance monitoring, it is a function of the license authority, which is the provinces, and we work with them as national on joint operations of monitoring some of these sites. And we do also support them, and I think ministers covered the issue of the mandate and role, the constitutional mandate and role of the different organs of state there. On the question, Honourable Lovaskakni and the Chair, on the industry waste management plans and the extension of time and also the nature of consultation, part of the process was a gazetting of what is known as a Section 28 notice of intention to call for these plans, which the Minister gazetted last year. Afterward, industries and associations submitted our plans and various comments, and some of the nature of these comments relate to companies that are global companies, some are multinational companies, they involve in exports and imports, raw materials that need to be imported, and with exchange rates and all of that, there are implications. Some of the implications of these plans involve the setting of recycling targets, they involve time frames, they involve the possibility of levies and waste charges being implemented. So all of these have to be very carefully considered. A number of workshops, consultations have been held involving industry associations like Booster, involving the National Treasury, SARS, other regulators, and so forth. So it is quite a complex matter, and we are really trying to do this properly in terms of the consultation. And with that also was the publishing of what is known as a pricing strategy, which calls for the appropriate pricing of various waste streams and so forth. So with that, together with the plans that need to be submitted, Chair, we are carefully considering the impacts as well, economic impacts, very carefully with Treasury as well, that so we don't, so we achieve the right objectives at the end of the day. Thank you very much.
So there's just one question from Honourable Member about the which will then have to come back to, about the EIA that was given or next to a very important river system, Nels Clay and so forth. We'll look at the river system issue in as far as it concerns us, but just to say that work is now the part of the work that is being done by licensing of mining is being done by DMR, but we'll definitely look at how it impacts on the systems and the industry.
Honorable Makula,
I know we're about to conclude, and I'm not intending to delay the meeting. But particularly on CITES, because I think it's the one that is key, we won't be here for some time, and preparations will be going ahead. I take it that the department is saying that they're ready with preparations, and so on. I've been assured here that they will host a successful COP17 of CITES. That is, it's fine. But I take it there are things that we may not know for now. Perhaps as we come back in August, if it does, we find it in our own program set for both chairs, we may need to get a final update as to what exactly is happening. I see in the program on the site issues and so on, there are agreements, like for instance with Mozambique, South Africa and Mozambique, the MOU. We may not get to understand that right at conference. Perhaps if there are things that we must know before we go there, let's get those briefings and so on. On the question I asked about the role of parliamentarians, I take it that other than being delegates and of the South African delegation under the ministers and being observers, there's no interaction of parliamentarians, either in SADC or in whichever manner. I just wanted to be assured of that, whether there's a particular engagement or interaction between parliamentarians themselves around the issues of society. The very last, which I think the department may need to come back just to get us to have a sense, on the benefit sharing agreement, well, not much detail, but just to understand what it entails, whether our people in those agreements are not being exploited, what mechanism or particular capacity we have to determine that it's market-related and the indigenous people do benefit as they are supposed to. So I'm saying it may not be today, but on-site is definitely we may need as we come back to get updated as to where are we fine, because it will just be shortly before September. And we can't wait until September to get to understand certain difficulties, if there will be. Thanks, sir.
Do you want to comment on that, or you can address that, Honorable Minister, in your closing remarks?
Yes, as I close, I think that...
Because I want to say something before I give you a hand over to you to close.
Oh, I know you're closing the chair, always close, you speak after.
Okay, no, it's fine, Honorable Minister, you can
wanted to comment. Well, I just thought that we should take this proposal of coming back to CHOR again, even on our proposals, because I think it's going to be important that even though honorable members may be observers, you need to understand the depth of what we're actually negotiating. Because somebody may come across you and ask a question about why is South Africa not doing whatever. We haven't today found time to actually talk about some of the controversial stuff that's coming. So in that meeting, we need to talk about the lion stuff, the potential proposals of banning this and that and so forth, so you two can understand that if anything is going wrong. Secondly, I think we need to just say that I don't know who leads SADC now, as among the 15 countries that are there. We haven't quite had parliamentary engagement at the CITES level, but at climate change level, we do have solid bodies that are at parliament level that are coordinating. It may well be something that we look at with the team that's overseeing, that's parliamentarian, that's overseeing our international engagements matter, or whether we can probably even at this stage begin. It will be quite a useful thing, because I tell you, on CITES there are some one or two countries that will share with you that are really, really pulling aside on the continent. So we are really trying to, and I think with Parliament element will help us to get in line a bit, or coordinated and try to speak in one voice. But finally, I think
we also do have the Africa Pavilion. This pavilion, the one thing that we didn't mention is that we are going to be considering to host other African countries that may be coming, just like what we had at Parliament at climate change level. So it's a South African pavilion, but it will also host some African countries that are playing a role in this, so that we see it as an Africa pavilion. So in that context as well, we can then coordinate. Even though honorable members are participants, are observers, you know, observers, even at climate change, we are not quite negotiating. But we will still ask you to do certain things, for instance, attend to that site event, speak on our behalf, lead that particular team and so forth as we go on. So we'll do that program. Thank you very much. And that outstanding information Chair will send, as we have undertaken to do today here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister and the team from the department. I think we would like to thank you very much for the information that you have shared with us. But I think we need to, in addition to what the honorable members have observed, just to reemphasize the point that we are happy with the 81% achievements of the targets that the department has set itself, and also the 16% partially achieved. So indeed it shows that the department is performing well, but there is room for improvement in terms of its performance to attain over 90% of the achievement of the targets. Now, just to add, Honorable Minister, on the concurrent functions, because honorable members have also been raising this question about the province, the role of the province and the role of the municipality. I was just looking at Part A of Schedule 4 of the Constitution, which identifies environment as one of the concurrent functions that are performed both at provincial and at national government. And there is also a Part B of Schedule 5 of the Constitution, where local government's role is identified there, of refuse removal, refuse dumps, and solid waste disposal, which is a function that has been assigned to local government. Yes. So local government will continue to perform a role, but I think the point that has been emphasized here is that national government must make sure, together with the province, that that function is complied with in terms of the applicable legislation. I think with regard to CITES, I think something that has to be looked at by the department is the awareness. Is the awareness around this upcoming activity, because it is an important activity, particularly as you look at the previous awareness that has been generated around rhino poaching. I think you can utilize this opportunity of hosting this conference to further create public awareness and mobilize the rest of the society against rhino poaching. So it's something that I haven't seen it being elevated, but I think you can look into that. And finally, the question of the waste plans that Dr. Mark has been speaking to, I think we need to interact more on that issue as ourselves, together with the department, so that we can understand the nature of the request that is coming from the industry to revise their plans. All the information that we have been speaking to, I think we might need to create an opportunity when we come back in August to want to interact on this issue, so that we satisfy ourselves that indeed there is justification for the revision of the plans that industry has to develop and has to comply with. I don't know whether Honorable Spark, we have got anything to say, but from the mandate that you have given to me, I think, thank you very much, Honorable Members, for attending this joint meeting of the committees. I think we'll be having more of these meetings so that when there is a crucial issue that the department needs to brief us, there is no point in going to the NCOP and coming back to the NA. We may as well convene this type of briefing so that they come and they brief all of us at once and we release them to go and do whatever that they need to do. So I've agreed with Honorable Swako that we might have more similar engagements in the future. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.